Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Fantasy Foot Beer Podcast. I'm James Kemp, joined as always by my good friend and fierce fantasy rival, Michael Stewart, Dr. Stu. I did not forget. Dr. Stu, how we feeling, buddy?
You almost forget it, but you come through every time, and I appreciate that. I'm doing well. It's another Tuesday night. No, it's not. It is. It's still Tuesday. We're doing a twofer tonight, but we are talking about the rest of the NFC West. I am psyched. There are a lot of interesting things to talk about, people that I can rag on a little bit, and I love ragging on people. It's a good time. But James, before we get to all that, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing really well, or I guess I will have been doing well. We're recording this on Tuesday, but putting it out on Thursday, so I can only speculate on how my Thursday is going. Let me try to do that now. Things are going great. I was woken up by a 100-pound golden retriever puppy. Did some yard work, probably. I think it's safe to say that I did a fair amount of mock drafting. My Thursday's been pretty good. Thanks for asking, Stu.
You're welcome.
Yeah, so we've got a good episode planned for you guys today. We got the Seahawks and the Cardinals. Don't think there's really any news. So, Stu, we can go ahead and get going on the Seahawks. So where would you like to start us there?
Yeah, so, I mean, on Thursday I went to the State Fair. Thanks for asking.
Oh, sorry.
I had a good time. It was really warm, and I probably didn't eat any of the crazy fair food just because, I mean, you get things like the deep-fried Oreo and then, like, the pickle pizza with jalapenos or something on top of it. You get it, and it's so novel of an idea, and then you eat it, and it's not super great, in my opinion, so I will probably just forego that altogether and preserve my diet. But anyway, talking about the Seahawks, talking about JSN, I almost want to pump the brakes, James, a little bit on some of the things that we're saying. I don't think that the Seahawks had an offseason that they wanted. I think they had different quarterback targets that were not named Sam Darnold and then took him as their kind of consolation prize. I mean, they needed a quarterback, so they gave him a big contract. He was great for a Vikings team that, I mean, boasted Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, TJ Hockenson once he was healthy. Aaron Jones had a career year their offensive line was good. Their defense was great. Kevin O'Connell is one of the most talked about head coaches in the National Football League. And now he's coming to Seattle, which has very few of those things. So we'll talk about Sam Darnold a little more in depth, but I don't know if JSN is going to get the same level of quarterback play as he did with Geno last year. And I think it could very well be for the worse. So, I mean, he broke out in a huge way as a year two wide receiver. He ended up with 100 receptions. It was amazing. Over 1,000 yards. Really great. Awesome. DK Metcalf was still there competing with him. He's got lesser competition now with Cooper Kupp, aged Cooper Kupp coming in. One interesting thing we have to decide, and the Seahawks have to decide, is JSN and Cooper Kupp work a lot of the times out of the slot. And they're not both going to do that all the time. Someone's going to have to go outside with likely new rookie Torrey Horton. So am I excited to draft Jackson Smith and Jigba? Yes. Would I be super comfortable with him as my first wide receiver on my team? Perhaps not. I'm on the big ups if he is my wide receiver too on my fantasy roster, but I do kind of want to temper a little bit of expectations. We've seen it before that the year two breakout wide receiver kind of comes back to earth a little bit in year three. So I don't know, you know, how much more up there can be for him. I'd love to see it, but there are significant question marks on this roster, on this offense, and it makes me a little, I mean, I'm excited to draft him, but I'm a little tepid at the same time. So I'll leave the floor open to refute or rebut if you want to do that, James.
Yeah, so I'm a little higher on JSN, it sounds like, than you are. You mentioned Sam Darnold being the new quarterback here in Seattle. True, and it is also true he was probably bolstered by the KOC offense in Minnesota. But I also think that bringing in Sam Darnold brings in a more consistent pocket passer type of player than Geno Smith, and that can be a good thing and a bad thing. But in terms of feeding the ball consistently to guys like Jackson Smith and Jigba, I don't see it as being a negative. And you mentioned Cooper Kupp as being this aging guy coming in who also plays in the slot. I don't think Cooper Kupp is going to unseat any reps that Jackson Smith and Jigba is getting. I think that a good coach will find a way to use their players effectively. But I am really high on Jackson Smith and Jigba, and especially if I'm going RB heavy early, I'll kind of go direct opposite of you. I wouldn't mind him being a wide receiver one. It just depends on where the rest of your team composition is at that point, and if you are adding a lot of wide receiver talent behind him as well. You mentioned that we've seen kind of a year three regression for elite wide receivers. We've also seen in year three being a moment when a lot of elite wide receivers step into that truly elite role. Year three was when Justin Jefferson became kind of the guy that we know now. Same with Jamar Chase. CeeDee Lamb kind of had this steadier progression. He peaked even later. You've also seen guys like Brandon Ayuk do it and then kind of disappear. So it's not like it's a set in stone thing, but I think that JSN is still very well equipped to be very good this season. And I'm pretty excited to draft him.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Torrey Holton, drafted in the fifth round out of Colorado State. Also, down the depth chart, MVS, Marquez Valdez-Scantling in there, and Jake Bobo. I don't see any of these other guys really being fantasy relevant. Even Torrey Holton, like, guy was taken in the fifth round. I don't think they're expecting him to be a big contributor early. There might be contradictory things being said at a camp there. But that's my take on the Seahawks wide receivers. But Stu, this makes me think. We're talking about late round dart throws here, and Cooper Kupp is going in an area where he is going to be close to being one. I want to know, from your perspective, I want to put you on the spot here, what is kind of the prototype for a late-round dart throw? What are you looking for in a player that you want to take late to help you win your league?
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for a league winner, you have to look for the highest ceiling available. The guys that, you know, are rookies, people like Matthew Golden, people like Emeka Egbuka. Emeka Egbuka is a huge one. We'll talk about him in the coming weeks. People like Josh Downs, Keon Coleman for Buffalo, Jaden Higgins for Houston. Young guys that have the opportunity for more. They maybe not have had that opportunity, or they're rookies in the National Football League, so we don't know exactly what their ceiling will be. It may, their ceiling might be sky high, and nobody can recognize it because we've never seen it. You take somebody like that, I think, 10 times out of 10. The thing that I struggle with Cooper Kupp as a late-round, quote-unquote, dart throw that can, quote-unquote, league win for you is the fact that we know what he can do. We've seen it at the tail end of last year. I don't think the beginning of last year is the true Cooper Kupp right now. I think the end of last year is the true Cooper Kupp we're seeing. I don't think a person who's fallen off in production, who then goes from the only team he knows, the only system he knows, and comes to a new spot in Seattle, is going to get back to the Cooper Kupp that we remember from yesteryears. He's probably going to have at least a couple games, good games against the Rams. I wouldn't begrudge him those. But Cooper Kupp, specifically in that range, there are far more targets, I think, that I would take over him and do it without any hesitation. All I see for him is he's going to sit on your bench. You're never going to be able to trust him in a start, so why are you holding him on your bench?
I think that's a pretty intelligent breakdown there. I'm not totally out on Cooper Kupp this year. I think he has potential to have a few high-ceiling plays here and there, but I do agree that we're probably looking for the prototype of a late round dart throw would be a younger guy. You know, someone who has a high potential situation, who is either fresh out of the draft or showed signs of promise in year one or year two and are looking to break out under the radar. But those guys are hard to find, and they're few and far between. They happen every year, but there are significantly more that don't make it than do. But Stu, go ahead and take us further down the depth chart here. Is there anybody else on the Seahawks in terms of the receiving core that we really need to look out for here?
Well, we also mentioned Torrey Horton. He's been getting a lot of buzz here in camp, so one you might want to watch out for. Not to draft, but over the course of the year, we need to be paying attention to these guys on waiver wires. If he potentially breaks out in a good way over the course of the season, maybe if Cooper Kupp is injured or Jackson Smith and Jigba is injured, God forbid, I mean, he's probably going to be playing outside. Like, one of those guys is going to be in the slot. We need two guys outside. That obviously leaves a big hole that Torrey Horton can fill. Whether that is a valuable fantasy piece for us or not is something that remains to be seen. I'm going to quickly, you know, throw out a couple things about the tight ends, James, and I'll throw it to you before we talk about the meat of the running back room. Seattle doesn't really have an established tight end as a receiving target, you know, something that we need to watch out for in fantasy drafts, but they did draft fairly highly in the second round, Elijah Arroyo out of Miami, someone that we are, you know, quietly excited about the talent of, the physical makeup of. He's struggled with injuries a lot, knee injuries specifically, so hopefully the talent will be expressed in the National Football League, but there's, you know, no telling what it'll be. Keep an eye on him as well. So, James, anything about the tight ends? Anything specifically about Arroyo that you want to talk about?
Yeah, so Elijah Arroyo is a guy who has been a little bit exciting under the radar for people. He's not going to be drafted in fantasy, but there is a pathway for him to become relevant. If not this year, then down the line. Taken as a second-round pick out of Miami, a lot of draft evaluators thought that was him falling in the draft below his value. But looking at his draft profile, you can kind of see why it happened. He's not exactly a complete tight end. He is a very good pass catcher, kind of that big-bodied receiver prototype of tight end. He's very good at catching in traffic, which you love to have in a tight end, especially as a red zone target. But to kind of detract from him, he is not a very good route runner, and he is not a very good blocker, which, you know, he fits the modern kind of evolved version of the tight end, but that's one less way he's going to get onto the field. Not that there's that much competition to keep him from the field. It's just what his role is going to be in this offense. Now, let's go ahead and move over to the running backs. Stu, do you want to get us going with Kenneth Walker? What do you think?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. He is quite the enigma. He has all the talent, all the potential, all the opportunity in the world. He has just fought injuries every single step of the way. A fully healthy 17-game season from Kenneth Walker is far away, easily a top 12. Probably into the, like, running back 8, I would put it. He's in a Clint Kubiak offensive coordinator scheme, a very run-first sort of offense. I mean, I don't expect them to be, the Seahawks, to be a very fantastic passing team overall outside of JSN, so the production has to come from somewhere. They want to run the ball. They're going to run the ball with Kenneth Walker. Big, bold words, if he is healthy. Is he healthy right now, James? That's a rhetorical question. He's not. I'm going to go ahead and answer my own rhetorical question. He's not. He's not currently practicing. Okay. Gives me the heebie-jeebies. Right now, he's going somewhere around the 4th round, from what I've seen in mocks, running back 17. So the injury history is baked in, but there are lots of there's lots of variability that he could go. I mean, if he was fully healthy this preseason, he'd be above a couple of guys that are in front of him, especially Breece Hall. Don't like Breece Hall right now. Looks like it's going to be a timeshare. If he stays out, people like James Conner, who we'll talk about later, Chuba Hubbard, maybe even Travion Henderson, who is flashing some serious speed in preseason, could be taking over this guy. It's a risk. It's a very CMC-esque risk, but now in like the fourth round. So it's not nearly as crippling to your fantasy team if you get that wrong. So James, anything about Kenbone Walker that you wanna throw out there to the interwebs?
Yeah, I'm not super excited about Kenneth Walker. I do see the upside, and I see why people would want to target him, but I think there's too many questions with this Seahawks offense. Zach Charbonnet behind him has shown to be, you know, relevant. But Stu, I want to run you through a few rapid-fire scenarios here.
Okay.
I'll give you a running back, and you tell me whether you would rather have that person than Kenneth Walker.
You got it.
All right, first one. Kenneth Walker or Chuba Hubbard?
Probably take Chuba.
Okay. Kenneth Walker or James Conner?
James Conner, easily.
Kenneth Walker or Travion Henderson?
Kenneth Walker.
Kenneth Walker or DeAndre Swift?
Kenneth Walker.
Okay, so kind of what I was trying to do there. Those are guys all taken below, or at least ranked below, Kenneth Walker right now in PPR rankings I'm looking at right now. So there is, as Stu is kind of accidentally making by me putting him on the spot there, there are a lot of questions once you get to that tier of running back. Obviously, you can rank people above and below whoever at any point in your rankings, but I think that it's really important to look at guys at this level and figure out why you would take who went. So even if Kenneth Walker is projected above somebody like James Conner, there's a reason to look closer and see why you might take someone over another, especially when considering depth charts. And was kind of alluded to, Zach Charbonnet is still there, and he has shown some flashes of being fantasy relevant. So, Stu, what does that mean to you in deciding this?
Well, I mean, he's probably one of the most valuable handcuffs in football, and he showed last year that he can be an RB1. Like, he can shoulder that workload. Finally, I mean, we were thinking about it for the last couple seasons, and he finally showed it last year. So he should be one of the most coveted handcuffs outside of maybe, like, Jordan Mason or someone like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think, like, when we're looking at handcuffs, you got to ask, like, what do you want to pay for him? Like, I'm seeing Zach Charbonnet going, in ones I saw today, in the eighth round. That feels high.
That's way too high, yeah. It also varies based on platform. I don't know where you're doing most of your mock drafts. Most of mine are on ESPN because the majority of my leagues are on ESPN. Charbonnet is, like, he's an afterthought in the double-digit rounds. So you can get him basically for free, depending on what platform you're using. And if he's going in the sixth, you need to pump the brakes. Like, no. No.
Yeah. And I think this is a good point to bring up. Like, it's a good idea to vary your draft prep methods between mock draft simulators and live mocks, and even moving around to different providers. But let's go ahead and move over and talk about the Seahawks quarterbacks right now. Do we even really need to talk about Sam Darnold? Is it worth it?
I mean, a little bit. A little bit. He's worth talking about because he could very well get into the streaming conversation. But right now, he's far out of the streaming conversation for me.
Yeah. And I know there's really no need to talk about Jalen Milroe, drafted in the third round by the Seahawks out of Alabama. But I want to talk about Jalen Milroe, so I'm going to real quick. I think it's kind of telling about the way that media acts around quarterbacks. Going into the season last year, Jalen Milroe was really probably the favorite to win the Heisman, him and like Carson Beck. And it very quickly shifted when people realized, wait a second, this guy Nick Saban is not around at Alabama anymore, and Jalen Milroe can't throw the ball? So it's interesting that he went this early in the draft. Maybe it signals how weak this draft class was, but also he's going in the third round. Nobody's taking a guy in the third round expecting him to step into a starting spot immediately. But also, looking at this depth chart at quarterback, what's your plan here? Like, Sam Darnold isn't old, but he's also not a guy who you think is going to take you to the promised land for anybody. And Jalen Milroe is a project, as a lot of quarterbacks are. Are you really drafting this guy to be your QB of the future? Maybe we see him in some games this year if Sam Darnold gets injured, but it does. That is one thing that gives me pause when thinking about other Seahawks players. But not super relevant to us, but talking more football than fantasy football.
Yeah, no, I mean, Jalen Milroe's not sniffing fantasy rosters this year. You don't pay Sam Darnold like that and then bench him unless he's truly horrendous. And that's possible, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, it does make me think about how we need to come up with a bet today. And I'm not saying...
Be careful, James. You said we were going to make a bet this episode. Don't tell me that you're thinking Jalen Milroe is going to be the QB1. I will take that bet.
I make stupid bets, but not that one.
It's Cardinals related?
It is Cardinals related.
Okay, I'm down.
We'll get to that one a little bit later. But let's go ahead and move over to the Cardinals. Stu, where would you like to start?
I want to start with James Conner. I am a fan of James Conner. I don't even care it. Who knows it? He is perennially undervalued. He is honestly an extreme value in drafts. If he is my RB2 coming into the fantasy year, I'm sitting pretty. He's a workhorse. Over 1,000 yards last year on an efficient 230-some carries. He plays in an offense that needs a little bit of offensive firepower when Kyler Murray is just unable to provide that for people. He's also played a nice 16 games, a cool 16 games last year. I mean, he's had his injury histories in the past, you know, but if he can stay on the field, he is productive. 30 years old, even then. RB2 target for me going... Let's see. Let's check ADP for him real quick. I think I keep seeing him in like the early fifth, if I had to guess. Yeah. Overall, 48, running back 19. So I think it's a very safe place to take him. Something you also want to consider in the conversation with James Conner. He's come out and said some really nice things about a second year running back, Trey Benson, who didn't really show us anything last year, but he was a little bit raw coming out of college and maybe it becomes a little more of a split backfield over the course of the season. Who knows? I mean, the day of the workhorse running back is going the way of the dodo, honestly. But James Conner is one of those few that can take on a lot of rushes, a lot of opportunity. So I like him a lot, James. What do you think about James Conner?
I kind of wish I didn't let you go first with the Cardinals because I wanted to be the one to stand on the table for James Conner. And
stand on the table. We'll stand together. The table has strong legs.
All right, we are standing on the table for James Conner together. What I like about James Conner, really, he is my favorite kind of fantasy football player, and that is one that does nothing flashy but has constant production. James Conner consistently outperforms his ADP, consistently outperforms his projections. But we do kind of get into the money ball situation. Like, here's James Conner. He's coming off of back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. He's been productive since he was a rookie, replacing the holding out Le'Veon Bell in, what was that, 2018, 2017, 2018, something like that. His flaw is he's never played a full season in the NFL. The closest he came was last year. He played in 16 of 17 games. And before that, I think his best was like 13. So there is very clear injury worries there. However, when he's healthy, he is being drafted like a running back two and plays like a running back one. Yeah, Trey Benson is behind him. I'm not super worried about that. I love James Conner. I'm targeting him a lot. Apparently you are too, so it's going to be harder for me to get him. But just as a value, I love James Conner.
You know, as I was listening to that, I could really only think of poor Jacoby Myers.
Yeah.
The consistent producer.
Yeah, we might be hypocrites, but there's things I like about that in a running back that I don't like as much in a wide receiver.
Sure. But I feel his sadness just echoing.
Yeah. Stu, are we hypocrites? Is this an us problem, or more accurately a me problem here? Am I a hypocrite?
No. I think there's a stark difference between the style of players those are and how valuable they are to a fantasy roster. Playing completely different positions, like, it's apples to oranges. So I'm cool with it. We're not hypocrites, I promise.
All right. In that case, let's jump over to the wide receiver position. And obviously the guy we have to start with, slash the only guy we really need to talk about, is Marvin Harrison Jr. And Marvin Harrison Jr. currently seeing him as the wide receiver 18. Stu, do you think it'd be fair to say that MHJ was the most disappointing rookie last year?
Of any rookie ever?
Last year.
I mean, that... Last year, yes. From where you took him, from where the expectations were for the production that he gave, like, I get it. He wasn't going to come in and set the world on fire, probably. But it was pretty disappointing overall.
Now, I do think that he showed flashes, and he did have to go through things as a wide receiver one that other rookies don't have to go through. He was coming in as possibly the most hyped receiver out of the draft ever in my memory. And you're not going to have a lot of guys who come out of the draft with number one corners on them immediately. So we've seen him with an offseason where he's been able to bulk up a little bit. He's been able to learn from what he experienced last year. He's had another offseason to work with Kyler Murray. And I see so much more potential than we're seeing with Marvin Harrison Jr. last year. I see him as a much improved prospect for fantasy this year, which is great because his stock is so much lower. Currently seeing him as wide receiver 18, I think ranking him there is fair, but Stu, this is the bet. I've got it.
Okay.
All right, my bet, Marvin Harrison Jr. will outperform his wide receiver 18 ranking. He will finish better than that.
Mm-hmm.
I make a lot of stupid bets, but this one, I think, is not a stupid one. I like this bet. What do you think?
Okay, you picked a good one because I could see plenty of worlds where he doesn't, so I'm willing to take that. I think a lot of what is holding Marvin Harrison Jr. back, I mean, he had his warts. I'm glad that he's, coming in with more experience, yada, yada, yada. You know, Trey McBride's going to have, you know, a little more focus on him as a pass catcher after the season that he had. But he is going to be hampered in several ways by quarterback play. I will talk about it. I'm not high on Kyler Murray, so I will take that. Marvin Harrison Jr., you say wide receiver 18 or above. I can say wide receiver 19 or below. So that is our third bet. If anybody wants an updated list of the bets that we have, listen to last episode because we talked about it there a little bit.
Yeah, we're going to need to come up with a few more bets because we only have like a division, just one division left to hit. So we should do two more bets in the next two episodes.
Two more? Okay.
So we'll get there. We'll get there.
Is this half point that he's wide receiver 18 in?
Nah, full PPR.
So PPR 18. Okay.
Yep. Okay, I think we should move over and talk about probably the most valued player for the Arizona Cardinals, and that is the current tight end two, Trey McBride. We can talk about Trey McBride as an actual prospect. We can talk about him as a large-bodied, pass-catching tight end, and he does it very well, especially with, you know, not a lot of other receiving options in this offense. And Kyler Murray, who seems like he's always running for his life and looking for someone to save his guts. And that's either going to be James Conner or Trey McBride. But even if you love the prospect that is Trey McBride, even if you love what he can do for you this year, we're still going to preach punt on tight ends. We've been saying it all year. We haven't shifted from that. And it's not so much about an indictment of Trey McBride. It's about looking at the tight end position. What does that top tight end do for you as opposed to anyone else at that position? Like right now, in the third round is where I'm seeing Trey McBride, sometimes in the second round. You're giving up potentially wide receiver one or running back one talent for a tight end one, and those things are usually not comparable. You can get close to tight end one production further down the list. The drop off between tight end one and like tight end five is not that significant. The difference between a running back one and a running back three is enormous, and it's even big between a running back two and a running back three. So punt on tight ends.
Just do your best to not overdraft tight ends. Yep. Look, he is an extremely attractive fantasy asset. To have him in your tight end slot is going to feel awesome, but you do make sacrifices. There is opportunity cost to be doing something like this. Your running back or your wide receiver or even both are going to be just a little bit worse than everybody else's. You are going to need Trey McBride to perform like at least a wide receiver two or even a wide receiver one. Like Brock Bowers was a wide receiver one style kind of point producer for fantasy teams last year. You're going to need that. And there's no other situation that is acceptable in terms of your fantasy team. Like Trey McBride has to do this. Can he do it? Yes. But any sort of injury, any sort of missed time, your team is going to suffer and suffer greatly, because you're going to go from, you know, a wide receiver two in your tight end slot to a streaming tight end, and your wide receivers stay the same. So you're worse off than if you were to lose your wide receiver two that's already in your wide receiver two slot. It's easier to replace something like that. I'm not super interested in getting these tight ends that are at the top of drafts in the second round. I ask you people, it's a big ask. I'm not interested in it myself. Please exhibit patience. Let people in your league draft Trey McBride in the second round while you gather the Chase Browns and the Kyron Williamses and the AJ Browns, like those sorts of names. Like, get those people in the second round and hold off on Trey, hold off on tight ends overall.
Yep.
That's my piece.
So I'd like to move on now to another position. And Stu, I know for this guy in particular, you've got a little bit of fresh memories for us. And I think I'm higher on him than you are, but I do like to make you squirm a little bit. I like to bring up difficult fantasy football memories for you. And I know that our listeners may not know the people who you draft, but I do. So,
I mean, they're going to know now because you make such a big deal out of it.
That's true. But let's just try to look objectively at Kyler Murray here. I think he's probably the last of the set it and forget it quarterbacks I would consider.
He's going to be a top 12 quarterback. Etch that in stone. He is going to be the most frustrating top 12 quarterback that you could take in drafts. He should be so much better for fantasy than he actually is. I mean, he should be mobile. He should be with great weapons. He should be in an offense. Cliff Kingsbury, is he? He's not there anymore. Who is it now?
Jonathan Gannon.
Anyway, he should be in an offense that is good. Good weapons, good efficiency, get down the field. You watched their games last year, and I did. First drive of the game, when everything is scripted, they had a whole week to prepare for this drive. They execute it flawlessly. You're going to go at 1:05 p.m. on Sunday, and you're going to see touchdown, Kyler Murray, come up on your phone. You say, yes, this is the week that he is going to pop off for me. This is why I drafted him as possibly the last, you know, rushing upside quarterback where, you know, I get the value in the draft. The rest of my team is strong, and I've got Kyler Murray who's going to finally show up as, you know, 6 years in. And then the rest of the game doesn't go to plan, and everything goes off the rails. It's like they could not execute on the fly. They could not deviate from what they had planned, and whenever they got off of the plan, their efficiency plummeted. He would be great for that first drive, and then the rest of the game, it's like, where's Kyler? Like, where are the Cardinals? What are they doing? Are they okay? Are they all right? No, they are not all right. A question I want to pose to you, James, because I don't know how much more I can stomach talking about Kyler. How much longer is Kyler Murray going to be starting for the Cardinals? We're going in year 7. I think we've seen that he is not going to be the guy that leads you to a championship.
So I think that more than any other quarterback in the NFL right now, maybe even more than any other player in the NFL, Kyler Murray is going into a season of prove it. He's gotten his big contracts. He has, you know, had a little bit of a revolving door at head coach, as you mentioned, and I don't think you can really say he's had that much elite talent there. He has had some good wide receivers, he has had some good players around him, but he hasn't been able to make the most of it, at least not in the second half of the season. It kind of his thing is he comes out of the gate hot, and then when the new Call of Duty drops, he disappears. That's the meme. But I think Kyler Murray does have the potential to be really good. And I feel like we say this every year with him. He's going to run around like a chicken with his head cut off. He's going to do stupid stuff. And he's going to look completely lost on occasions. But I think that his potential is right where you said he was. I think his potential is QB1. Not the QB1, but in the set it and forget it starting quarterback conversation. Whether or not he does that, or how consistently he does that, is another question. I don't necessarily want him on my team. Where he's going, I may wait for a streaming quarterback, and maybe he is a streaming quarterback, not one that leaves your roster, but one that is matchup dependent. But kind of like you said, people get lulled into a false sense of security with him, believing that you've done so much for your team earlier in the rounds, now you can defer to a guy like Kyler Murray. And maybe I'm just naive, but I think he has the potential to make it work. I'm not going to be excited if I draft him, though.
Well, Kyler Murray,
go ahead, let it out.
I mean, there's a universe that he ends up on my fantasy teams again. I have a short memory sometimes, but I will also have a short leash, and I think it's going to pay to have a short leash with him as well. At least be looking for, you know, the Drake Mays of the world, some people that at the quarterback position in fantasy could take the next step forward going into 2025. Did you see, it was a no-look pass in that preseason game, but did you see the highlight, quote-unquote, I use that term loosely, of his bad interception in preseason last weekend?
Yeah, I saw it.
I laughed aloud to no one. There was no one around me. It was me laughing in the corner of a room like an idiot looking at my phone. Anyway, I think that really does it for the Cardinals, doesn't it? I mean, we've got place kicker Chad Ryland. Their defense is probably going to be pretty mediocre. Overall, not much to talk about there. I do want to give a shout out, James. Something that we talked about over the course of the week. You said it yourself. We talked down to Cam Little. Said Cam Little's probably not going to be drafted, and then he, smashes a 70-yard field goal. And I bet people draft him now.
Yeah, mad props to the guy for making us look bad in an incredibly quick turnaround. And it's not even the start of the regular season yet. Just bangs a record-breaking field goal, basically dunks right on our heads. Mm-hmm. It was pretty awesome. So shout out to Cam Little. I'm still not drafting you, but yeah.
I'm sorry. I was unfamiliar with your game.
Yeah, unfamiliar with your game, but still not drafting you. So Stu, I think it is time for last call. What are you drinking, buddy?
Well, I mean, that same as last time. It's still Tuesday. So we were talking about the Guggenheim House Brewing Company in Indianapolis on Tuesday. I'll talk about it here again just in case you missed that episode. You shouldn't. It was a good time talking about the rest of the NFC West. Go listen to it right now that we're finishing up. But from the Guggenheim House Brewing Company, the Kolsch. The Sunny Days Kolsch. Looks like a good time. I mean, it's summer. It's hot. You want something light. You want something breezy. Because it's flipping. I want to say a different word than flipping, but it's hot.
It's spicy.
I don't like it.
It is not pleasant.
Sorry. Go ahead, James. What are you highlighting for us tonight?
So I'm going to do something that I don't think I've done on this show before. But I'm going to be highlighting from Go Brewing in Naperville, Illinois, the Head-On American Wheat. And what makes this beer different from others I've talked about on this show is it's non-alcoholic. Maybe some people will maybe be upset that I'm doing a non-alcoholic beer, but non-alcoholic beers are becoming a lot more popular these days, and for good reason. And Go Brewing is one of several that have popped up that specialize in non-alcoholic beers. But little quick beer fact for you. Non-alcoholic beers actually have alcohol in them. To be classified as a non-alcoholic beer, it has to have between 0.02 and 0.05 alcohol, ABV content. Anything below that, and it is considered alcohol-free. So that's why you still have to be 21 to buy non-alcoholic beer. Overall, it used to be that your non-alcoholic beers were a little bit frowned on. Now every brewery makes them, and there's a lot of really good options out there. So if you're someone who doesn't want to drink alcohol but still likes beer, good news. Things are getting good, and I can recommend this one as well as several other non-alcoholic beers that I may bring on the show later. But Stu, I can't think of any time before this that neither of us have actually been drinking alcohol on the show.
I don't think it's ever happened in the history of any time. I think this is the first that we're both currently off the beer wagon. But I mean, let's be honest, we're almost 30 years old.
Oh, don't say that.
Can't drink beer like we used to.
Brave new world, I guess.
It's coming up. I'm like 3 months away. It's next month for you, isn't it?
Yeah, don't say that either.
Late September?
Late September, yeah.
That's all right. We're gonna party hardy. Uh-huh. Send you off into style to the retirement home.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. Well, Stu, go ahead and while you just stab me in the heart there, go ahead and last thoughts.
Yes, so you mentioned our socials, Fantasy Foot Beer on Instagram and X. We're also at fantasyfootbeer@gmail.com for your beer requests. Send us your beer requests. Tell us what we should go out and break our diets with, I suppose. Always look forward to chatting with people. Tell us why we're wrong, tell us why we're stupid, or tell us why we're right, and you only ever listen to Fantasy Foot Beer. I would be thrilled to hear something like that. So anytime, reach out to us. It's been fun. We're going to talk on our last division next week. We are so close to being done. We just got to get through one more kind of slog division in the NFC South, James. Looking forward to it. Why don't you round us out for the evening?
All right. Stu, thanks for another great episode, buddy. Also, thanks to Indy, the golden retriever puppy, who has been sitting underneath my desk for this entire episode. Good job, buddy. Yeah, thank you to all of us, for all of you, for listening today. We appreciate you choosing us over all of the other fantasy football podcasts you could be listening to. So for Dr. Michael Stewart and for Indy the Dog, I'm James Kemp. Good night. Good talk.